And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of the More Phenomenal Hockey Show. It is I, Michael, and I am joined once again by our good friend at Hockey Hot Stove, Mr. Rob Del Mundo. Rob, how you doing, bud?
Pretty good. Thanks as always for having me.
Yeah. So real quick, before we hop into things, the More Phenomenal Hockey Show is brought to you by Oats Overnight. When we're on the go but still need breakfast, Oats Overnight is the healthy on-the-go breakfast choice for the show and TXHD Hockey. Use our exclusive link in the description on both TXHDHockey.com and in the YouTube show description to get a $20 discount on Oats Overnight today. So it's been a very busy maybe 24 hours or so in the PWHL. Last week we had the Detroit franchise announced. Today we had two more franchises announced, or two more cities announced for expansion. And of course we now have our PWHL Walter Cup final matchup confirmed at when Montreal defeated Minnesota last night in a 2-1 thriller. So Rob, just before we really hop into things, how do you think things have really been for the PWHL in these last like 24, 48 hours, or maybe even week when you include the Detroit announcement?
Well, it's good to be busy, but it's great that we're talking about it. I mean, it's especially for like, I mean, it's like night and day when you're coming from, when I was first covering women's hockey back after the Salt Lake Olympics, and it's like, you'd have the old Beatrice Arrows at York University crowds. Like, I mean, the crowds were so sparse, we'd be like up against the glass alongside the rink, and it's like, that's before like the old NWHL and CWHL, where historically it's been a women's hockey's been a quadrennial sport where people pay attention only once every 4 years. But thanks to the advent of the PWHL, now it's like, you've got takeover tours, and you've got like, I mean, sellout crowds, and for good or for bad, I mean, the decisions that the league makes, I mean, stirs up a bit of controversy, which I guess we'll get to in a second. But to sum up the answer to your question, I mean, it's great that people are talking about it. It's great that, instead of like, I mean, even for myself, like, I mean, when if I'm covering a game after the Vancouver Olympics in 2010, Canada's won a gold medal, and, I'm walking up to players like Tessa Bonhomme and Natalie Spooner saying, what do you think of the future of the growth of the game, et cetera, et cetera. And you get tired of asking those questions when, it goes to the CWHL folds a few years later, PA tries its tour, the Dream Gap Tour, and then finally we get the one league, and now we can talk about the power play, and now we can talk about starting goaltending and what's going on with special teams between Walter Cup participants and expansion. So we'll get into each individual topic, but overall as a whirlwind, if you're Amy Shearer or Jana Hefford, you just have to love the fact that people are talking about the league.
Yeah. And, obviously last week I touched base on expansion when I had Bill Meltzer on to talk about the Flyers Carolina series and about the Stanley Cup playoffs in general. Obviously the announcement of Detroit was made. It sounds like they could possibly buck the trend of having just Detroit on the jerseys. It sounds like, when the uniforms are announced, the name and the logo could be introduced at the same time on the jerseys, because per reports, this has been something that's been in the works for over a year with Detroit. What are your thoughts on Detroit being the first team to be announced and some of the things that you may have been hearing on your end in regards to the Detroit franchise?
Well, I mean, it was one of the four cities that I correctly predicted back in October. The flip side to that is It turns out it might be the only city that I have correct, but we'll get into my prognostication skills at a different date. No, Detroit, I mean, it's they set records not just the first takeover 2 year, but then they bumped their record last year. So for the first 2 years that Detroit had held a takeover game, they had set a record for U.S. attendance for a women's hockey game, which has been since, of course, usurped by Seattle, and then I think of course D.C. had it for a little for all 2 weeks.
Madison Square Garden now, I think, holds it at this point now. So,
For each of Detroit's ventures into the takeover tour, they had briefly held the record. But I mean, not that I'm a Red Wings apologist or anything, but Hockey Town, yeah, okay, I can see not just for the pro level, but you see what a hockey hotbed has been for years, decades. At the collegiate level, Red Berenson and the University of Michigan and everything. History wise, it's just a all those players from Michigan on the 1980 Miracle on Ice team, which clashed with the Minnesota and the Massachusetts players. But yeah, Michigan hockey hotbed. I have no qualms with the actual market itself. It's a good step.
Yeah, and it's one I probably didn't predict that they would be one of them, but I did have an inkling that they would have been one because they did the PWHL Takeover Tour 2 years in a row. They had really great success, which then leads me into the next part of before we get to the next two who were announced at the time of recording today. Obviously, everyone will be watching or hearing this. On Friday, before the game one of the PWHL Walter Cup final, we learned as the rumors were coming out, which I addressed on last week's episode of Las Vegas, Hamilton, and San Jose, that Washington, D.C. is not going to happen because of how the ownership structure is done with the PWHL. Which is a move that I actually agree with the PWHL on. I think that the PWHL having everything in-house right now is the smarter move because we kind of saw what happened to the PHF once teams started being sold to owners, especially when you had like one ownership group owning three teams. It kind of became a mess a little bit with the PHF. So I think it's smarter to kind of keep it in-house for now before truly trying to get individual owners in each city to make sure that when you do try to do it, you make it more viable to for owners to want to invest in the league that way. That's just how I view it. I have other takes as well from a press perspective that I'm not going to talk about on the show, but you know about it because we've talked about it a little bit. Looking at you, take over DC. But then we also learned that Edmonton and Calgary were not going to be part of it. I think it's because Calgary and Edmonton have to be a joint thing for travel purposes. And with Calgary getting the new arena built up soon, Calgary just isn't a viable option at this time because of that fact. So I could see Edmonton, Calgary down the road. And from a couple of things that I've read, it sounds like Edmonton's kind of in the same boat as DC in regards to the ownership side of things as well. So what do you think about, and then obviously with the rumor of San Jose being one of the four, that rules out Denver, which is the one that surprised me the most. What are your thoughts on some of these cities that we kind of thought could have been shoo-ins that ended up not becoming a thing?
Well, yeah, I mean, so to go back to the article, which is probably at the bottom of a birdcage by now, that I wrote in October. I had Detroit, I had Quebec City, I had Calgary and Denver. So yeah, so to bring it back to Denver, yeah, that one. Yeah, because the takeover went so well, because it was I guess a part of it was also I was going to To allude to the international, I thought they'd be going two Canadian and two US teams as part of a four-wave expansion, but it looks like they want to focus on the United States primarily to get to get some kind of national TV contract, which I guess I can understand if if the financially is more viable south of the border, to the disappointment of Canadian fans and the Canadian dollar. But no, De Denver especially, and it's what's some of the interesting comments I'm reading on social media. It's kind of like you take if it's if you're not going if you're going to host a takeover tour, but not have it in as many cities that hosted the tour. Like, I mean, is it really just a bait and switch type of thing, right? It's like, you know, and we're not talking about, like, I mean, there's testing the waters for like cities like Buffalo and Pittsburgh, crowds of fewer than 10,000. Yeah, okay, you guys obviously don't want a team. But then, on the flip side, where it's been successful, it is like places like Denver, like Chicago, and when I wrote that article, Denver made sense to me because it was a balance. It was like, I mean, I was going for the perspective of two Canadian, two U.S., and then geographic proximity and rivalries, such that when I had Denver plus an Alberta team, and then. If you move eastbound, and you would have the Quebec City, Detroit type of thing. So you'd have two Canadian, two West, two American, plus two Western and two Eastern, and that's where I sort of envisioned it. But as we've seen, it's just one comment I read from Denver. Like, I mean, biased because I'm a Broncos fan, but some of the Denver people were saying I drove down like to support that game, which was in the middle of that snowstorm where the Broncos ended up losing to New England, but we won't talk about that. But I remember it was such a snowy game, and the fans in Colorado who are driving to I guess it's called Ball Arena now. I almost called it Pepsi Center.
Well, it was Pepsi Center, but it is
Yes,
Ball Arena now.
Ball Arena, and yeah, who owns it this week? And it's and now it's like, okay, after all the support that we gave, it's like. Their league is now giving it to cities that did not have takeover games in Vegas, and looks like, as you said, most likely San Jose to be announced on May 19th.
Didn't
And
San Jose have a takeover tour game though?
my mistake, my mistake.
Yeah, I
Yeah,
think Vegas is the only one of the
yeah.
four that did not have a takeover tour game.
That's right.
Hamilton is the only one that is not in an NHL market.
Yeah, and then I was also going from the perspective of when I wrote the article, because when I wrote it in October 2025, Hamilton had not yet hosted a
Yeah,
takeover
and not only
game.
that, but also at the same time, I don't even think the takeover tour schedule is announced yet either for the seat for this past season. So, but yeah, it's definitely interesting because remember, I think it was like the first time you're on or the second time you're on, I'd mentioned my two. I went with the same method as you, two Canadian, two American. I went with Calgary, Edmonton. I went Denver, and I went like Chicago, Detroit, with the idea of okay, you keep the number of Canadian teams even as well as the American, but then you're able to create a legitimate Western Conference and Eastern Conference because of travel logistics. That's how I kind of viewed it on my end. It's like, how do we fix the travel logistics for the league? Because even now with San Jose, like say San Jose is officially confirmed next week, that's going to create a very interesting travel dynamic out west because once you go past Minnesota, Minneapolis, all the teams are on essentially the west coast, literally, with the exception of the next two teams that we're going to talk about. Obviously, Hamilton is right outside of Toronto and Las Vegas, which were the teams that were announced today. What are your thoughts on the teams in Hamilton and Vegas?
Well, Vegas was a bit of a surprise, but I mean, I guess just basically let me preface that. I guess 4 weeks ago it would have been it was out of the blue, like, I mean, about 3 or 4 weeks ago. But then as stories started to surface, and having all the support from the youth programs in Vegas, I guess Vegas was a surprise. Would have been was more of a surprise because it did not host, as we were saying. like a takeover. It just seemed to be out of the blue. But I mean, if you look at the Vegas market, like sports wise, I mean, like with the Golden Knights' success, and then of course it's always been big in terms of collegiate, like the NCAA. Well, then as long as UNLV isn't having any gambling scandals or anything, but then even the WNBA, Vegas has always been a hot spot. So it's like none of these cities that have been named, like I mean, Hamilton, Detroit, Vegas, and soon to be San Jose. It's not that any of them are bad markets. And it's like, and I'll touch on Hamilton, of course. I mean, well, Hamilton's a great hockey town too. It's like, I mean, they're also getting the AHL team, the Bridgeport team, moving from the from Long Island to Hamilton. So, I mean, it's always been a great hockey town. Whether or not it's been NHL ready, well, I mean, we'll talk to Mr. Jim Bosilli about that. But all things being equal, Hamilton, I like the stat that popped up in the media releases that 70% of the fans that had attended the past takeover tour game in December were seeing a PWHL game for the first time, which that stat in and of itself is a strong indication, at least off the surface, that it's not going to necessarily poach fans for the Scepters. The teams can coexist. So, I mean, I think Hamilton's a great
Which is one of the
market.
funniest arguments when it comes to the NHL with the Maple Leafs, because obviously we know that they've never been happy about Buffalo being there. And there had been, like, as you mentioned, Jim Basile, he had tried unsuccessfully, I think, what, two or three times to reload to buy and relocate a team to Hamilton or even Markham, to which we know that the Maple Leafs ownership was not too very fond of, as well. But yeah, like that stat of 70, what was it, 77%?
I think it was 70%.
I
I
know it
think.
was like in the 70s, but like the fact that it's in the 70 percentile of people seeing their first ever PWHL game, it proves that point of what you just said, that they're not going to steal from the Scepters market. And if anything, it's going to strengthen that area too. And you had mentioned Buffalo. I know this from covering the NWHL PHF. The Buffalo Buttes did very well with their attendance. Like, they had a very strong fan base, some of which still follow TXHT to this day and interact with TXHT to this day, which thank you for you guys for your support. I appreciate it. So, like, I'm a little surprised about Buffalo because Buffalo is kind of like one of those little hockey hotbeds. And obviously, the Sabres now doing well in the playoffs has helped out a little bit more now. But I remember, I just remember the Buttes and I just remember how well they were, supported up in Buffalo when they existed.
Yeah, well, of course, I didn't follow PHF as closely as I did the other leagues. I mean, I'm aware of the Buttes' existence, but it's Google says that 8,512 fans attended the takeover tour game that was hosted in Buffalo. So, I mean, if Buffalo wanted a team, sometimes I don't know
Yeah.
what else was going on in the city of Buffalo that day, but if you want.
I can say this right now, and I know this because I ended up losing a women's hockey writer from my site. When everything went down with how the PHF was sold and shut down, a lot of people held resentment towards the Walters and the PWHL. And there is still a very strong resentment towards it. I know that straight up because, again, like I said, I literally lost our only true women's hockey writer because of it.
Well, yeah, I
So
mean, it's yeah, well,
that I wouldn't be
that was
surprised if that because they're maybe trying to still, in the way PWHL still needs to find a way to earn those people's respect. And stuff like that. I think that's what it really kind of comes down to because of that, the hard feelings. And I know it's been like 3 years now, but sometimes those wounds last a while.
Possibly, and it's not that the sentiment is wrong, but at the flip side, Is that the PWHL's priority right now? It's like, yeah, I mean, I can certainly understand the resentment. Like, I mean, when the PWHP, excuse me, PHF was swallowed up, not just in Buffalo, but the whole how it all came about, and then you had the bubble players who would, like, I mean, just committed to contracts, and it's like now, like, I mean, we just bought a house. What are we gonna do now if you know, can't crack the PWHL roster? So I get that. So I mean, yes, and at some point, you know, you're not wrong in saying that the PWHL would need to mend fences in Buffalo. However, if Denver and you know Hamilton and all these markets are like bringing in the cash, and I mean, and if San Jose,
You go where the money's coming.
yeah, well,
And
it's like
exactly.
that Simpsons. I don't know if you're a Simpsons fan, but it's like when that episode where Aerosmith guest starred, and then it's the Flaming Moe episode is
Oh,
my real
yes,
quick
the
reference,
Flaming
because
Moe.
it's kind of like, you know, Homer's mad at Moe because he stole his idea, and Moe's had the cash register saying, "I mean, sorry, Homer, I can't hear you all over the money that I'm counting." So it's what
Oh,
it
yeah. Oh, I am a Simpsons fan. Remember last time we were talking about Simpsons.
Moe, you just lost a customer. Yeah, you can use it, but I could start quoting, so we better stop me right now, because otherwise I'll turn this whole pod into a Simpsons quote.
but yeah, no, but I mean, and I agree with that. You go to the markets that want it more desperately, and I agree with that. I just know from my experience of going through that ordeal, because I still have the articles up on this website of us talking about the signings that teams like the Buffalo Buttes and the Metropolitan Riveters and the Connecticut Whale were making at that time when everything happened. So it's like, as somebody who went through that, I understand how people can feel in a way. So, but Hamilton's getting it. Hamilton, I think, will be great because that arena, TD Coliseum, just recently got renovated. And like you had mentioned, the AHL, the Bridgeport Islanders, are moving from Connecticut to Hamilton starting next season. So you're going to have an AHL team that the Hamilton franchise will be able to work with and collaborate with, which will be good for the for the PWHL in that regards. So,
Yeah, I mean, I've yet to attend an event there ever since the upgrades, but I mean, Cops was great for history, but it was, I mean, it was time to upgrade. So, but I mean, just based on history, you had that, you know, Eric Lindros Memorial Cup there back in the 90s, and then you had the and of course, I mean, who can forget 1987, you know, Mario Lemieux from Wayne Gretzky, and so I mean, it's just steeped in history, but. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing. I didn't make it out to the takeover tour game when Toronto played Vancouver back in December, I guess it would have been. Check
yeah.
that. It was Seattle. Yeah. Anyway.
So it hasn't been officially announced yet because I think they're waiting for because obviously tomorrow, Friday, or today, in the case of everyone listening, watching this, Hamilton's being officially announced with their press event that they're having at TD Coliseum. By the time you're listening to this, it will already have happened, which leaves the fourth team of San Jose. If it becomes official, being announced on May 19th, they haven't fully come out. Like we've seen the reports, Haley Salavian from The Athletic came out and had a very well-written article about what the expansion process is going to look like for the roster building. But the PWHL themselves have not come out and officially announced anything for that yet. How do you think? Because we know we're getting four teams. And you just had the draft eligible list come out for the PWHL draft in June that will take place in Detroit. How do you see this offseason looking with this expansion process?
Oh gosh,
Be
organized
because
chaos, I
because
guess.
yeah, because
But
there's apparently a six part
yeah.
process to this
Yep.
thing. It's like
Organized
we've read
chaos is
it.
the best. Yeah, I read it, and then some of it I had to read through a couple times, but I mean the gist of what I get is, like, I mean, you can after like a minimal protection by each team, like it's the three player protection, then beyond that, then you can, you know, the teams are free to select like a franchise player, like a designate. I don't remember all the acronyms anymore. But then you and then the step two or three is a not so franchise, and then you got the mixture of the of the free agents of the players who are like very very good, but like I mean not foundational. So like I mean I guess you're I guess I'm talking about like bottom six forwards or like I mean but the bottom four pairing defenders. And it's yeah, it's gonna be organized chaos. It's like I mean, I'm just trying to even trying to see it from a Scepter's perspective. I mean, let's I mean the team that I cover, of course, if I didn't say it off the top. So
You mean the jersey that I'm wearing right now?
let's say yeah that one. Let's say from a Toronto perspective, they protect Daryl Watts, Renata Fast, and Reagan Kirk. So then, I mean, where does that leave? Like I mean, they only have six players under contract. So I think that's part by Gina Kingsbury's design to like not overcommit and see how this all process hangs out, but or turns out, excuse me. But then it's like, you know, you've got players like you've got like Olympians, like you know, Malte, Turnbull, Spooner. It's like, I mean, they could all be either want to be one of those top one or top two designates, and then you've got and you've got like sort of like a repeat of the sentiment last year, where like you've got a foundation of the team, not just Toronto, but I mean every team is going to be affected by by having that identity all in this mixing bag, in this Yahtzee, if you will. And then whatever comes out is going to be it's going to be a roster that's going to look very different from the previous year, not unlike how the 2025 editions of the team look very different from the previous season because of the Vancouver-Seattle expansion. Connect the dots. So it is, but as a result, going forward, then it's the lesser of the evils in that. I mean, and I had this conversation with some of my colleagues as we left Coca-Cola Stadium for the final time. It's better that they do, like, I mean, they said 2 to 4 years. Or two to four teams within the next couple of years. That was when, like, I mean, 6 months ago when it was tabled, but they didn't know how. But we all agreed, like, I mean, as a group, the writers that I was talking to on the GO train, it's once they, it was better to do all four now. It's just like get the process, like, I mean, now as opposed to two this year and then two next year, and then you have to go through another expansion wave over here and get more organized chaos. It's like, yeah, it's gonna look a lot different going into this season, and it's going to be like a lot of like very good players, Olympians switching teams again, like we saw last year. But now that it's gone to 6 to 12 teams, then hopefully, like I mean, it can stabilize. And if there's, I mean, I'm going under the assumption that this is going to be it for like I mean, the next couple of years, then you can stabilize it with 12 teams, and you can start to build the identities that I talked about last time I was on the pod, and there's no risk of dilution of talent, not in my opinion anyway, because it's like you got 235 players who've declared for the draft, type of thing, and it's like you can fill these players with there's enough talent out there, I guess is what I'm saying, to fill the spots, not just from the collegiate level, not just from the North American collegiate level, but from the European side as well. So you've got I think there's enough talent to go around. I don't think the 8 to 12 is going to dilute the talent in any shape or form. But then at least just, okay, rip the Band-Aid off, just go through one more round of organized chaos like we saw last year, and then that's it, and let it stabilize.
Yeah, and to piggyback off of that, I know one thing that was said going into the Olympic break when they were doing the media availability with the players that were going to the Olympics. I believe one of the American players, I don't remember which one, they were asked about the importance of the Olympics, and then I think expansion was brought up, and they said expansion would be great because that would open the door for more of these Europeans from Sweden, Finland, Czechia, Slovakia to be able to come over and play on a regular basis with the Americans and the Canadians. So now by the time you get to the next Olympics in 2030, those programs in Sweden, Finland, Switzerland, Slovakia will get even stronger because they'll have been so because those elite players from those countries will have been able to play and train with the Americans and Canadians. And we've seen how those, obviously the Canadians and the Americans have been so dominant in the Olympics in women's hockey. So there's a great benefit that would come out of this. And like you said, just rip the Band-Aid off, just do all four teams at once, because we also know there will not be expansion again for a while. Because they made it known that 12 teams is the max they want to be at for a while. So, and that's a key note right there. And also, I need to do a correction. I've been saying today is Thursday, thinking tomorrow's Friday. It is actually Wednesday and tomorrow's Thursday. So I am apologizing for anyone who's been confused by what the heck I've been talking about by saying that tomorrow's Friday. Today is
Today's
Wednesday. We're
Wednesday.
recording.
Tomorrow's
Yeah,
Thursday. Thursday being Monday.
we are recording Wednesday night, and we're releasing this Thursday afternoon.
And
This is what
Thursday.
happens when I have an art. This
Right.
is what happens when I have articles in front of me and not schedules. And I just pulled up the PWHL final schedule, and that's when I realized, wow, Mike, you're an idiot.
Well, not. So to be clear, just as it fits into the context, it's like Thursday the 14th is game one, Saturday the 16th is game two, both games in Montreal, and then we go to
Monday,
Monday
May
the
18th in
18th
Ottawa, and
and
then
Winnipeg.
if necessary, game four will be Wednesday, May 20th.
No, I brought that up because I thought I heard you say earlier that we're recording in advance of game one. It's like, no,
Yes,
we're
we
recording
are.
after game one.
And I'm
After
like,
game one. So
and I
we'll
don't
see
have the
the
schedule in front of me, and then I'm
All
like,
good.
because I'm looking at expansion and I'm more worried, and we're talking about that. But and speaking of expansion, I want to end it on this. It's not technically an expansion note, but it was something that was brought up at the very beginning of the season. It looks like it might have been rectified now, but that is the Ottawa Charge and the arena situation. Because with everything going on with LeBron and Flats, talk about taking the minor, the junior arena, dropping it from 9,000 to 5,000 seater. Obviously, the PWHL took issue with that. The Charge has now been playing at Canadian Tire Centre, obviously the home of the Ottawa Senators. How much has that been a benefit to the Ottawa Charge? Because obviously, one thing that was put on the table was that if the arena situation cannot be fixed, or the PWHL could not have a seat at the table in regards to talking about the arena situation for them, that relocation could have become a real possibility. How do you feel the Charge have been since moving into the Canadian Tire Center, and the future of that franchise specifically? Because I know that was a big talking point going into this season.
I mean, I think it's great. I think it's great for the franchise. I mean, when the Oseg scenario, the one that you just described, was coming out, I'll never forget it because that was in mid-November, which coincided with the Hockey Hall of Fame induction. So I got to as the media was set up on the red carpet, Jana Heifetz comes out, and then I just asked her a couple Q and A's on Jennifer Botterill and Daniel Sauvageau, two of the inductees. And the last question I posed to Jana is like, how do you feel about Ottawa? What are the next steps? And then she just gave me a quick response, and we hope to have some type of resolution because, at the time, her quote to me was, "We don't want to leave Ottawa, but we have to do what's best for the league." And then as I'm thinking about this in my head, it's kind of like, what could possibly be like, the best, like, I mean, I don't want to say bad news bears, but I mean feel good movie type of thing, right? And that's Ottawa. I mean, just going on a run and possibly, like, I mean, repeat a run to the Walter Cup final, possibly even winning the whole thing, which we'll get to in a second. But I think just in terms of everything that's gone on with Ottawa, and I mean, and I know, like, I mean, Carl McLeod's diagnosis doesn't have anything to do with the arena situation, but that just with the storyline, when you take all into consideration, and it's culminating in this a scenario where they're drawing near sellouts to a Canadian Tire Centre, where they've returned to the Walter Cup final, and and thankfully all the best that Carla is back on the bench. We wish her all the best in her recovery. But it just seems the parts seem to be coming together. And to get to the point of what does it do to the franchise, I think it just proves that to the OSEG committee, to the municipal government in Ottawa, that yes, they can draw, and yes, they can draw better than the 67s. And if you need to rework that, agreement somehow, or at least find this viable solution, the charge isn't a fad. The charge isn't going to go away. This is the real stuff. Like, I mean, ever since like 2024 New Year's Day, I mean, the narrative, it's been okay. The inaugural year of the PWHL 2024 was going to be a honeymoon year. That first year was like, I mean, let's just see where this league goes after the honeymoon period of 2024, January to April, is over. And now here we are, like, I mean, 3 years later, and it's like, this isn't a fad. People are watching women's sports. So, I
And
just love
attendance
how
keeps going up.
exactly. Yeah.
Yep,
And
attendance keeps going up.
it's like all the press releases, it seems like, Paul Kratz, media director of the PWHL, is sending out a news release every week or every 2 weeks saying how we've broken another record, right? Or how the league has broken another record. So yeah, it's
Yeah, Paul and his team must be really happy that, because when you have that type of news, it keeps you busy, and that's the type of stuff that makes you happy.
absolutely.
To have that type of stuff. So with that, we're going to now hop into, we've been talking about the Charge. They are in the PWHL Walter Cup final for the second consecutive year, and they're taking on the Montreal Victoire, who are making their first ever appearance in the final after defeating the Minnesota Frost in game five. Although game five was delayed by a day, because some of the Montreal players had an illness. And that resulted in the game being postponed a day. I know some people were blaming the fact that they had to play them in Minnesota had to play back to back. I don't buy that. I'm sorry. We've seen in the NHL, I think this season alone, because of the Olympic break, the NHL teams, I think, had between 7 to 10, maybe even 11 back to back games throughout the season in a very condensed schedule. It comes with the business of being a professional athlete. Yes, it's odd with the way, because you and I talked about it when we did the preview of the semifinals, how weird the schedule was, because Boston, Ottawa had a 6 days in between because you didn't know what the arena availability was going to be for those teams because of the NHL playoffs going on in Ottawa and Boston as well. Same thing with Montreal and Minnesota. So it's like you had all these weird X factors in play that the PWHL just couldn't control. But one thing I will say is this. This is a rematch of last year's semifinal between Montreal and Ottawa. I have pulled up the schedule from last year's semifinal with the
Okay.
scores. All four, Ottawa won 3 games to 1, and all four games were one goal games. The only game Montreal won was the four overtime game. The scores were 3-2, 3-2. That was the four overtime, 1-0, and 2-1. One would say that was a great goaltending battle between Gwenna Phillips of the Charge and Anne-Renee Desbien of the Victoire. In your opinion, is that something that we could anticipate seeing again this year?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's always going to come. It's all cliched, but at the same time, yeah. I mean, it just comes down to goaltending in this league, and with goals, in the PWHL, hard to come by. I mean, you see a lot of 1-2-1, 3-3-2 games. It's going to be. It starts between the pipes. Nine times out of 10, that's the foundational. But I mean, yes, it's a team game, but it's kind of like, in the NFL, it's going to be the quarterbacks. In baseball, you're going to talk about the pitching matchups. In hockey, it's what it is. You're going to talk about the goaltending matchup, and you've got two Olympic goalies going head to head. And I mean, you've got Gwyneth Phillips, like, I mean, who practically carried the team on her back, a year ago at this time. Basically vaulted her team that couldn't score into dueling four overtime games against the Minnesota in the Walter Cup final. And on the other side of it, you've got Debian, who's I mean, playing out of her mind. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Elizabeth Giguere of the Minnesota Frost, who had that sure goal taken away by Debian, is
Right
at
on the goal
the
line. Oh, that was
Giguere is
beautiful.
still Probably like, I mean, beating her head against a brick wall, going, how did I not score on that play?
I mean, not just that, but the way that Bien had to make the save, like she had to
Yes.
completely turn around, get the goalie stick right before the goal line just to grab the puck. Like that was just pure insanity, that save. It was remarkable. And that just and then let's also remember she also did the it wasn't really a two pad stack, but it was kind of a Dominic Hasek style leg kick, where she kicks the puck into her glove, and it's like so making big saves like that to really secure, Montreal's ticket into the final was huge. Last night when she did that was great to watch. When you see the and actually a player that you mentioned on the last episode time you're on the show, was Mikaela Kava.
Yep.
And who comes in scores that double OT winner to send Montreal to the final? Mikaela Kava. How do you think that makes her feel, knowing that I think that was her first goal of the playoffs and it was a big one? You said that she was going to be like one of those impact players, and she in fact was for Montreal. Do you see her being one again in the final against Ottawa and become a six-time champion 6 years in a row?
Apologies with
Talking
Kava.
about, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess she's got to be apologies, Michael. Maybe we need to we can always edit in this post, but Mikaela for the Ottawa Charge.
Yeah.
Okay, but
Oh yeah.
you
Oh,
for
she's
Montreal.
charged. My bad. Yeah.
Yeah. No,
Wow.
of course.
I am. I.
Yeah.
Th this is on. Th hey, this
Fix
is the
it in
episode of me making mistakes now.
That's okay. We fix it in post.
Yeah, we'll fix it. But
Okay,
now we'll just
so
go with the mistakes. We'll go, hey, Mike, you're an idiot.
okay.
This is the great thing about doing giving a live feel. But yeah,
Yeah, so
Kava gave sc
Kava
scored that
scoring that overtime winner for the Ottawa
a
Charge
charge.
against the Boston Fleet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean the stat that I pulled, I mean it's just a crazy stat that last time I was on the pod, I quoted the stat, but I'm gonna repeat it just because it's fun. It's like, I mean, she could be a six-time champion in five for five different teams, like 6 years in a row. That's just unreal. You win in the Swedish league, you win in the Russian league, then the PHF comes, she wins like with the Toronto Six, then back to back with the Frost, and then you got that mid-season trade to Ottawa, so she could potentially be a six-time champion. No, it's yeah, I mean, she's not going to be one of those, like, I mean, foundational Olympian players that we talked about that, might be poached in the first round of expansion. And she's arguably not even a household name, but you've got to be doing something right when the teams that you're on, win five straight titles and are vying for a sixth one. And yeah, that Boston Ottawa game was crazy. I mean, I thought Alina Mueller was going to force game five when she had that open net type of thing, right? And it's one of those things, when you miss that open net, it's like that when you leave that door ajar. I know you said you didn't watch the men's Olympics, but I mean, when Nathan MacKinnon missed that open net for Canada, it's like, that Canada should win against the United States, but you never know. And then look what happens. So it's like when Mueller misses that open net, it's like, I mean, then of course, then it becomes that, the goalie duel, Phillips and Frankel. And of course, it takes double overtime. And then Frankel, it's like, if I could say, I mean, first of all, I mean, how can you not be a Frankel fan? I mean, I was a voting member of the for the award, so Frankel, full disclosure, was my vote for MVP. But she just did not have the she didn't necessarily have a poor playoffs, but poor by Aaron Frankel standards that we saw in the regular season. That game, which one? Game three, late in that looks like it was going to go over overtime, but then Salvelainen shoots it off the boards, and then Frankel misplayed that rebound that ends up being the game winner in
Oh, that might have been
game three, was it
it
not?
was either game two or game three,
Or
because
game three, and then game
game three
four,
game four was the double overtime
double
game.
overtime, and then my point for the double overtime on Cava's goal. You watch that sequence in the replay. Frankel gives up not one but two big rebounds. The second one on which the charge capitalized on. So, I mean, Frankel got my vote for the MVP and goaltender of the year in the regular season. Full disclosure, but the stats will prove it out. I mean, PWHL, you go to 226 playoff goalie stats, fourth out of four goalies in goals against average. Is Aaron Frankel at two? Not that 2.09 is anything to sneeze at, but especially. But I mean, when the other three goalies have GAAs under two, it's like Frankel just didn't put up the numbers in the postseason.
Yeah.
That was the difference.
Yeah. So when you look at Montreal, Ottawa, we've talked about the goaltending. We talked about Mikaela Kava, being that, clutch player in the in finals. Who do you see on Montreal being clutch? Because me being me, I know what I'm talking about. I just do horrible segues this episode, apparently. We should just retitle it. Instead of saying new teams are previewing the final, it should just say Michael can't segue properly.
Yeah, you're good. Y'all
Because
good.
it was Marie-Philippe Poulin who scored the game winner for Montreal to move on from Minnesota. Who do you see being the game possibly one of the impact players for Montreal?
Yeah, okay. So I'll answer it from a, like I take you mean non-conventional because anybody can say Poulin or
Oh
Stacey
yeah,
or
obviously.
Marie-Philippe.
Like
So
we
a
know the
dark horse.
Poulins, we know the Ambroses, we know,
The dark horse
this.
candidate. Oh, geez. I hate to go with recency bias because I mean when Catherine Dubois was put on that top line in place of Abby Rock and then had that amazing laser shot to get the Montreal on the board in that game. But a bit of recency bias for that game. But also, I may have touched on this the first time you had me on when Carissa Donkin, New Brunswick reporter, wrote that book on the PWHL. And she wrote it from the Montreal perspective because that was a team that's closer to where she lives. And she it was basically covering PWHL Montreal in 2024. So when I interviewed her for a story on that book, one of the questions that I posed to her was, "It's great that you wrote about Debian and Poulin and Stacey and Ambrose, but how important was it? Because I love Carissa, how you did this. How important was it to tell the stories of the maybe not household names, but a player like Catherine Dubois, who she talks about like I mean, I don't want to say extensively in the book, but often enough such that by the time you read the chapter, you know what Catherine Dubois has gone through, like in terms of finding an apartment. It's like, she's not an Olympian, but I mean, she's a reserve player. So is she on the list? Is she not on the list? Is she like a bubble player essentially? So fast forward to game five of what we saw last night. And I mean, she's now Catherine Dubois is on a top line with Laura Stacey and Marie-Philippe Poulin and, finds the net. And gets her team on the board. So I'll put Dubois as my dark horse candidate.
All right, and then can't use Cava for Ottawa, but who could you see a dark horse for them?
Well, let's see. I'm also trying to not repeat what I said because I mean I think last time I did say Fanuza Katarova
Yep,
with the
y
curls.
yep, yep, yep.
I
You
think
mentioned
I
her
said
last time.
locks last time. I should have said curls because it's all about the curls. So, wow, it's well, Ottawa is they're just a team that just doesn't go away. It's like such it you get all of a sudden a dark horse will come in like I said Katarova Kava. Leslie was surprisingly quiet. She I mean one goal two assists. I guess it's not nothing to sneeze at, but it's she wasn't quite as dominant, much like Eldridge on the Boston side, where they had such strong finishes and they were okay in the playoffs. But I think when I go up and down this Ottawa roster, you look at names like Brooke Hobson had a big goal in that game against Boston. I can't remember if it was game four or game five. Just maybe not again, not someone that leaps off the page, but game like it was game four. That's right. I think it was the
One person I could see possibly being a dark horse, because I usually ask you who you think they are, and I usually just keep my mouth shut. Katerina Morozov. Morozova.
Rasova, yep.
Yeah, I could see her, being a dark horse. I've been watching her since the NWHL PHF days, and she's a very talented player, and I think she could, be a player that could be a dark horse for the Charge. So,
Yeah, I mean, did she represent the Czech Republic?
yes, she did.
Yeah,
She was part of the Czech team Czechia for the Olympics. And she tends to play in the World Championships for them as well too.
that's right. Yeah, I think I covered. That's right. Well, the when did well they won bronze in 2023 in Brampton. So I mean, at the time because I was more focused on. The Toronto six players at the time, it was a Teresa Vanezova and Daniela, the other one. yeah, but I wasn't as focused on Mrazova, but it was
Yeah, Mirzova
it was a
played
Czech
for
roster
the.
coached by Carla McLeod. I mean, we all of course know me that Carla, is familiar with the Czech players. So yeah, it's an
Yeah,
interesting dynamic.
she played for Czechia at the 2022 and 2026 Olympics. She was a top three player for Czech at the 2025 Worlds. Let's see here. She was with the Connecticut Whale from the 2018-19 season all the way through, and then she returned the 2022-23 because she did some she also played for the Boston Blades in the CWHL, and she was actually a champion on that part of that championship team in the 2012-13 season.
Okay.
And then that was prior to joining the University of Minnesota Duluth.
Yeah, no, she's a
So
very well-heard player.
she has a very solid career that she's had. So,
That tournament in Brampton, it was when it was the other name was picky, but I said Danielle. They had a Danielle Pešova, but I was focused on Leskova as well, I think, because I mean, me being Toronto centric and everything, but it was Benišová, Leskova, and as you said, Mrazova, and a lot of players. Oh, I didn't. I forgot that Kristina Kaltenkova was also on that team. You may have heard of her, but yeah, it's like and of course, like I mean, the relationship that Carla has with all the Czech players, it just makes for some great storylines.
So let's talk predictions for this series. Who do you see lifting the Walter Cup for the first time ever? Because we are guaranteed a new champion for the first time in the league history since Minnesota won year one.
I have to go with Montreal. It is a tough choice, and I don't say that loosely. I mean, Ottawa is a great team, and then it's a great storyline, as I just mentioned a few minutes ago, with everything going on with the arena and everybody rallying around Carla McLeod. But I just think, and it'll be a close series. I mean, it's like, to your point about all those one goal games. I mean, even Boston and Ottawa, even though that was decided in four games, it did not feel like a four game, or at least it deserved to go to five. But it was no surprise that Boston and Ottawa matched up in one goal games throughout the regular season and playoffs. So if you fast forward to Montreal Ottawa rivalry, it is I think it's going to be close, it real really tight. But I just think the way that Montreal, and I'll allude to it again, that they the way they the way they built that team around their physicality, players like Maggie Flaherty getting in your face and everything else like that, and that series that series against Minnesota, I mean, it was vicious. You got Britta Kerr getting suspended, and I mean, it's like all these cross checks going back and forth, and
Man,
it's
we can have a whole episode on Britta Kerr. We when do they finally just give her a lengthy suspension for some of the things that she's done? Like, we can do a full episode on that. Like, that's a little ridiculous.
Well, yeah, it's one of the. I mean, you don't want to wait for like, I mean, a Marty McSorley, Donald Brashear type of thing, or Todd Bertuzzi, Steve Moran. We can get into those analogies, but Montreal's physical play, I think, and that's not to say that Ottawa isn't physical. I mean, they can get in your face as well, but I mean, maybe I don't know that Ottawa's physical prowess was tested as much against Boston. It was a different type of series. But again, it's not, I'm not saying these women don't play hard. They do. And let's be clear, any single one of them can kick my ass. So let's just get that out of the way, first of all. But I think it's going to be very close. But I just think, and when you got Debian playing the way that she's playing, and when you've got Marie-Philippe Poulin, who has won everything in hockey except the Walter Cup, even though she's not at 100%, and everybody knows that. Oh, big deal. I'm just going to score a series game-winning goal in game five. No big deal. I'm just because I'm Marie-Philippe Poulin. And the same with and all managed by at the top, Danielle Sauvageau, who has won everything that there is to win in hockey, except that Walter Cup. I just think Montreal's been on a mission from day one, and it's like it is a really tough choice to pick them over Ottawa. If I am wrong, and if Ottawa wins, I'm not going to be surprised. But it's not going to be a huge colossal upset, I guess is the way that I would phrase it. But I'll say Montreal in five.
All right. With that, I am going to go with Ottawa in four.
Oh,
I know it's a little gutsy on that one. I just think, I think Ottawa is just riding a high right now. It's their second time in the final. They have that experience of being in the Walter Cup final that Montreal doesn't have. So, and they know that, they know where they fell short last year against Minnesota. And I think that's going to be a motivating factor for them. And here's the thing. I could also be wrong and it'd be Montreal and I'd still be happy, just like in the case of you too in this, because both of these teams are very deserving. Because I could also see Anne-Renee Desbien just steal the series too. But at the same time, we can see Gwyneth Phillips steal the series as well. So, I think it's going to be Ottawa. I think them moving into the Canadian Tire Centre at the time that they did has also given them such a big morale booster as well, because now instead of playing in front of like 8,000 to 9,000 fans, they're playing in front of like 16,000 to 17,000 fans, and that number just keeps growing every game that they play there. And I think that's just a big morale booster for the team that could really ultimately push them into defeating the Victoire and become the Walter Cup champions.
Yeah, I mean it's like we said, like we've been talking about. There are a lot of great storylines. I mean, if I'll be so happy. I mean, if Ottawa were to win, it was like I mean, and especially like I mean, it's in this business, you have to be impartial but at the same time, when I go to interview players, when I go to interview coaches, I mean, obviously we're all human. We have our we all have our favorites, and vice versa. The coaches have favorite media members that they don't want to talk to or don't want to talk to, type of thing. But for me, speaking only for myself, it's like whenever I put a recorder in front of Carl McLeod, either at the podium covering a game, or whether I was at Brampton Canadian at CAA Center covering the Czech team, or in Utica, New York, the following year covering the Czech team internationally, I always know Carla's gonna give me a great quote. Carla's gonna give me a deprecating quip about herself, type of things like, "Oh, I think the coach sucks," type of thing. Right? I mean, that's just Carla. That's just her style, and it is just very endearing to the media. She's just so personable, so congenial, type of thing. Right? I mean, it's like if it so that that's where I separate, from my brain. If like I mean, if I'm just going what's happening on the ice, technical analysis, this matchup versus this matchup, whatever. I'm seeing Montreal, but from the human element side of it, how can you be rooting against Carl McLeod? It's like if I'm wrong, I'll be I'll she's the first person I'll be happy for. I'm sure I'm not alone in the hockey community. And for what it's worth, I was 1 for 2 in my semifinal predictions. I had Montreal. I had Boston over Ottawa. Being 1 for 2, I mean, that's just proof. I mean, my opinion, plus $3 will get you a ride on the TTC, sir, as we've seen with my expansion predictions. But there we go. That's why we're in the business.
One for four in prediction is in one and two and for expansion and one for two in the playoffs so far.
We go.
There we go. So with that, Rob, where can the people find you on social media and your work?
Yeah, okay, so the website is hockeyhotstove.com, and there's a author tag filter or a league filter. Just search by either Rob Del Mundo or PWHL. Find me on Twitter if you like at Rob underscore Del Mundo. I can't remember if I left my direct messages on this week. I'm funny that way. But if you at me on Twitter, then I'll get back to you pretty quickly. And yeah, you know, LinkedIn, Facebook, the platforms. It's just I'm everywhere. You can't get rid of me.
And I, the person who doesn't know what dates are or know how to segue properly, you could find me on at TXHT underscore hockey on all social media. And of course, TXHTHockey.com and personally at the Lindenbaum 75. We do have one production note to bring up, and we'll remind you on, I think, the next week's episode as well. But kindly note that the end of this month, the week after Memorial Day, or the week or the days following Memorial Day, there will be no episode of the More Phenomenal Hockey Show because I will be in Brantford, Ontario, Canada for the Walter Gretzky Street Hockey Tournament. So there will be no episode. If we record one, it won't look good. Not the way I've been making him look this season, at least. So just a production programming note at the end of the month, there will be no episode because I will be in Canada playing in a hockey tournament, getting beat up as I probably rightfully should for all the screw-ups I've done on this episode today. So, with that, until next time, we will see you on the ice.